Good morning to all the participants for this webcast. My name is Prahlad Halgeri, and I'm part of the Disclosure Initiative project team with the ISB. And I've got with me Alan Takshira, who is the Senior Technical Director, and Christy Robinson, who is the Technical Principal with the ISB. And before we start today's session on Disclosure Initiative updates, a couple of admin-related matters. I will refer you to slide 2 of the presentation. You can download these slides by clicking the button below the slides window to access the presentation. You can ask your questions by typing into the designated box on the screen and then click submit, and we'll try and answer as many questions as we can. A recording of this webcast will be available later on on the Disclosure Initiative project page, and the link is given on slide 2. Just to emphasize that the views expressed here are that of the presenters and not necessarily of the ISB or the IFRS Foundation. Before we start the overview, a quick introduction to the session on slide 3. So the purpose of this session today is to give you an overview of the Disclosure Initiative and the activities that comprise part of this project, and also to report to you on our progress on the 10-point plan that was announced by Hans Hugerforst, the chairman of ISB, in June 2013, and of course to give you an opportunity to ask questions and seek clarifications on our project. So I would encourage you to ask as many questions as you have, and we will try and answer them. I will now turn towards Christy to take you through the overview part of it. This is from slide 4.
Thanks, Prahlad. So if I move to slide 5, this slide gives you an overview of the Disclosure Initiative, and I think what it shows you is that the initiative is not just one project, but is made up of many different projects and activities. And I think this reflects what we understand to be the disclosure problem, which has many different facets. And as you can see, the Disclosure Initiative is split between projects which are in their implementation phase, so the amendments to IS1, which we completed at the end of last year, and an exposure draft that we have out at the moment on amendments to IS7, which deal with the reconciliation of liabilities from financing activities. Now, most of this presentation today will be talking more about the work we're undertaking in the research activities of the Disclosure Initiative, I'll talk more about those, or Al and I will talk more about those in the slides to come. We're also going to touch on some of the ongoing activities we're undertaking on digital reporting and also some of the work on understanding filing and access requirements to IFRS financial statements. So if I move to slide 6, which gives you an idea of where we've come from and how the Disclosure Initiative actually was formed. So it really started with messages we heard as part of the agenda consultation in 2011 that a framework was needed to help improve the effectiveness of disclosures in financial reporting. On top of that, or responding to that, we held a discussion forum in 2013 and summarised the messages we heard from that forum in a feedback statement in May. Now, that feedback statement gave us the structure and the content of what we're going to work on in the Disclosure Initiative. And I think work really took underway at the beginning of 2014. So at the end of during 2014, we produced an exposure draft on the amendments to IS1, as I mentioned earlier, which we finalised at the end of the year. And we also have published at the end of the year an exposure draft on amendments to IS7, which deals with the reconciliation of liabilities and other items which an entity determines are part of its financing activities. Now, I think what this slide also demonstrates is at the same time we're undertaking that additional research on those research projects, as well as those ongoing activities in digital reporting. But what's here that's really important, I think, is this idea that there, you know, the behavioural change that goes along with the work that we're undertaking. I think in the work that, or the discussions we've had about disclosures, there's a strong message that the ISB is only part of the disclosure problem, and that much of what can be done or to improve disclosures is about changing behaviour. And I think it's fair to say that as we've gone along this path, I think a number of other parties in the financial reporting process, you know, auditors, preparers, are also looking to see how they can change within existing IFRS. And I think there's a lot of scope for that change, and we've heard some positive results from a number of constituents that they already are making positive changes to the way they produce and report IFRS financial information. So if I move to slide 7, and this gives you a sense of, you know, I've talked about the disclosure problem having many facets, and what this slide demonstrates is that we think there's sort of three components to that problem. It's sometimes we're told that we're focusing too much on disclosure overload, so cutting down disclosures. And that's true. There is one aspect of the disclosure problem, which is that, you know, financial statements are getting longer and longer. But we also recognise that actually that's not all of the problem. We've also heard as part of our work that the disclosure problem is also that there's not enough of the right information, and we're trying to respond to concerns around that area. And I suppose the amendments to IS 7 on financing liabilities is a good example of where we responded to calls from investors for many years for more information about debt. And I think the other aspect of the disclosure problem that sometimes gets looked over in some of the broader discussions is that we heard very strongly from many investors that, you know, financial statements have the right amount of information, they're happy with the content, it's just how it's communicated. And so some of the work that we're doing, particularly in our Principles of Disclosure project on formatting, for example, really try and to address some of those issues about how financial statements are pulled together rather than what their content is. And I think it's important to know that bringing those all together, that the objective, the purpose of the disclosure initiative is not to decrease or cut disclosures, but to actually improve the effectiveness of the disclosures in an overall fashion. If I move to slide 8, this is looking at the disclosure initiative as another perspective, and I suppose it's fair to say this is kind of a good way that Alan looks at the disclosure initiative. So, Alan, would you like to maybe sort of take us through looking at the disclosure initiative from this perspective?
Yeah, thanks, Christy. As Christy is showing you, there are all these different threads, and I think one of the things that people have told us is they're struggling to see how they all fit together. So this is designed to try and sort of, in a sense, think about how the parts fit together, which bits are broad, which bits are specific, and so on. Materiality is something that pervades all of financial reporting in terms of as a concept and how it's applied and what sorts of things you need to think about. You have to apply materiality principles to the whole financial report and the financial statements. So the idea of this is we've separated the thread from outside the principles disclosure discussion paper. As Christy's mentioned, we're going to be developing a practice statement for that. Within the POD, as we call it, we also have these acronyms, but the POD, or Principles of Disclosure, the way I think about it in very practical terms is that essentially we're going to be writing a new standard that if you're a preparer and you're sitting down putting together a set of financial statements, it gives you basically an instruction set, not specifically in terms of what rules, but it gives you a guide as to how you're going to generally shape your financial statements, what things you need to think about. Next month, we're going to be discussing non-performance measures, alternative performance measures and non-IFRS measures and so on. And we're going to have some principles built into that about limitations or constraints. So if you use them, you shouldn't give them more prominence and so on. Those sorts of things will come into the general guide that you would sit down with. you then know roughly what the shape would be with the main or primary financial statements, what the expectations are for the notes and why things should be put into notes, for example, some requirements and guidance about how to think about what sort of order to present the notes in and so on, and about how to present accounting policies and other things like that. So really, it's a very general instruction set. You then go to each of the individual standards to have a look at the specific disclosure requirements, but you've got the general shape in front of you. Then outside or below that box, you'll see, and Chris has already mentioned the drafting guide, will explain a bit more detail, but that's not for you, that's for the board. And so what we're doing at the same time is we know we have a responsibility to write clear, consistent disclosure requirements. So having an internal guide that the board buys into, you would see this because I think our drafting guide would sit in public space so people actually understand how we're drafting. That's something we're doing as well. I think the thing that most people are waiting for is us to go back and actually have a look at all the other standards and try and address what they consider to be disclosure problems in other individual standards. But before we can do that, it is important that we actually get the right pieces in place, know how we would redraft those things consistently, that's the drafting guide, and know how it fits into the bigger picture as well, which is that replacement of ISS 1, 7 and 8. So that review will happen, but it will happen a little bit later. Just want to give one little example, though. We have got some work being done on the review. Christy's going to mention that in a minute. And some examples of how we might redraft will go into our discussion paper. So you'll start to be given a chance to input on that. Probably the biggest question, though, is this thing on the right-hand side of the slide on the dotted lines. The reason it's outside the dotted lines is it's not part of the disclosure initiative. And Christy reminds me, she's got enough on it to do at the moment without performance reporting. It is a separate thread. When those who are familiar with the old financial statement presentation project will realize that most of the things addressed in that project are being addressed in the disclosure initiative, but not how you structure the income statement, for example, the performance reporting aspect, how you deal with some aspects of OCI, whether you should have substructures within P&L, for example. That's going to be, has been separated out. Last July, our board decided to add that project as a separate project to our research program. Interestingly, the USFASB did the same thing in the same month. And we have, just this week, in fact, got a staff member allocated that project to start doing a scoping document. And you should see in the next few months how we might progress that particular project. So that will run in parallel with disclosure. Now, let's just move on to the next slide, slide 9. Just a couple of little things on materiality. There has been a concern that the materiality is not applied well in practice. Some of the outreach that we've done, we've collected information that some jurisdictions have very specific, very clear boundaries that are numerical, quantitative, and in some cases expressed in currency units. Anything above a specified number of currency units is deemed to be material. In other cases, they've got well-developed guidance either through legal precedent, through securities regulators, or accounting standard setters. So it varies around the world. We're very conscious of the fact that there are some well-developed practices in terms of applying materiality and very good practices as well. So we've decided that we do need to, as an international standard setter, develop an international standard or some material to help people think about materiality and provide some hints as to what issues they should have in their minds when they're doing materiality assessments. We think the most effective way to do that is through what we call a practice statement. So we're going to be putting together a draft practice statement over the next two or three months, and our plan is to have that out the first half of this year. And that will pick up a lot of practice that we've observed internationally. And as I said, it's not going to say this is how you apply materiality, but it's emphasizing more of the things you need to think about as a preparer in terms of thinking about whether information should or shouldn't be in there, aggregation and so on. So we think that'll be something in the short term that will help significantly. We are also looking at the definition of materiality as part of the practice statement. Sorry, as part of the principles disclosure discussion paper. But we don't think the definition of materiality is actually the key, because we know that we can work with, there are varying definitions around the world. We can work with most of them, I think. So, but we are going to see whether or not there are some things we need to do to tidy it up and make it a little bit clearer, I think, internationally.
Yeah, and I think make it consistent across both the conceptual framework and where it's mentioned in standards at the moment.
Exactly.
So I think I'll do the next slide, Alan, which is number 10, and that's on our POD, which is Principles of Disclosure. We should write that out fully just to make people make clear. But the reasons for this project is that we did hear clear requests to develop a presentation and disclosure principle standard that applies across IFRS. And I think our thinking here was that we really need to look at the existing standards which deal with that type of guidance, which is IS1 on presentation of financial statements, IS7 on cash flows, and IS8 on changes in accounting policy and estimates. Now, I think at some point we'd said we'd replace them. I think it's more looking like I think one of the board members in their last meeting said we'd renovate those standards. I think what we have done is try to build on the work that has been previously done by the ISB, in particular in the Performance Reporting Project, and by others on a number of research projects around disclosure frameworks. By other national standard setters. I think the other work and something we're really conscious about is that in parallel we have to work with the foundation that's being set by the Conceptual Framework Project and making sure that we align and build from that. We also will bring, we want to try and bring those standards, I said IS1, IS7 and 8 together to get a standard which helps an entity shape and present financial information in its financial statements. Now, the output we're expecting from this is a discussion paper, and I'll give you a bit more detail about the timing of that coming up in a later slide. But as we've been discussing the various aspects and content of this discussion paper with the board, it has become clear that there is other guidance which could be useful, in particular around communication and formatting, which we don't necessarily think sits within a standard, but could be helpful as education guidance. And we're thinking here something around like a plain, clear writing guide, or when do you decide to use a table versus a description of something, and we felt that type of guidance or help wasn't necessarily something that was a requirement but could be used by entities more in an educational way. So if I move to the next slide, which is slide 11. And this is a little bit what Alan was touching on in the previous slide and the relationship with the Principles of Disclosure Project with the other projects. As I mentioned, the Principles of Disclosure Project builds on the objectives set in the conceptual framework, in particular relying on the objective of financial statements. At that, we're trying to expand down to an IFRS level and give you entities a bit more detail about the nature and role of the various components of the financial statements, in particular what we call the primary financial statements and the role of the and nature of the notes. And we think a bit more detail about the role that these components play can help people apply materiality and help into those various components, but also help us understand what particular objectives for disclosures in each of those parts are, so that we can write better standards around them. I think the other thing that we've included in the Principles of Disclosure Project is work on cash flows, but that I think is also, and as we're discovering as we're working through this project, really asking us some questions about more specific statements. So, and is also being sort of very much tied to the thinking that we think we'll have to do in the performance reporting project. So I think there's some questions that we need to answer here internally about to what extent is the work that we're looking at on cash flows and the cash flow statement tied more closely to the performance reporting project. And I don't know, Alan, if you want to give any more detail about how the performance reporting project might interrelate with the principles of disclosure project.
Yeah, well, it's a good question because it's probably the most common question we get asked as well. As I said, the simplest way I think I would express it is that when we have a look at the principles of disclosure and the the standard that we will develop out of that. That will essentially retain for the moment the concept of simply profit or loss and OCI as we currently have it in IS1. So we will keep that structure, and certainly we have to probably retain the same sort of structure we have for the balance sheet and the cash flow statement as well. And then the principal's disclosure project is going to ask some more fundamental questions about whether or not we should have the same sorts of categories in the cash flow statement and the performance statement as well, which is probably the most common thing that users tell us. They'd like to see things to reconcile. So we're going to have a notion of operating in the cash flow statement. Why don't we use the same or similar notion in the performance statement? But that's quite a fundamental change, the income statement. And there are all these basic questions. Should we be defining operating activities, or should we provide a broad description and then tell entities that they should tell us what they consider to be operating, use it in a consistent manner, and so on? So they're quite fundamental questions. And so in a way, we are constraining ourselves a bit in principles of disclosure and keeping the existing structure and really improving, as Christy said, that was about communication, about the clarity of presentation. And then we'll later on have a look and see whether or not we want to perhaps change or categorize things in a slightly different way.
So if I move to slide 12, which is giving you a bit more detail about the topics that we plan to cover in the discussion paper, the first bar gives you a sense of the overarching objectives and principles that we would be covering, and these really build off and expand and develop those principles that have been developed in the conceptual framework project. So we would be talking about the role of primary financial statements and the role of the notes. As Alan mentioned earlier, we're going to touch on the definition of materiality, and also we have a sense about to what extent we need to include guidance on communication principles, grouping, ordering and formatting. And some of that work I think is going to move over into that more education material. And then I think we, in the next bar on application, we're really seeing, well, how do we apply some of those overarching objectives and principles to some of the specific issues that we've been asked to look at or where we know there's a problem. So, for example, non-IFRS information, we're hearing a lot about that in the press and from guidance from regulators at the moment. How do we improve objectives with disclosures? How do we meet the tension that's often evident between consistency and comparability of disclosures, the relevance, or letting an entity tell a story. We've got some more specific guidance around cross-referencing and how people should disclose accounting policies and what is a significant accounting policy. I think there's going to be some more work too on some of these broader issues, and I've touched a little bit about the disclosures about cash flows, and we need to think about how that fits with the performance reporting project. But we're also doing some work on the disclosure of changes in when we have a change in policy and estimate, and that work is being undertaken by the OIC, and I'll tell you a bit more about that. And then, as I said, some implications for existing standards and touch a little bit on digital reporting. And I'm conscious that we're in the time, so if I slide to move to slide 13 and review the other part of the disclosure initiative is the work we're doing to review existing standards and to develop a drafting guide. And as Alan said, this is something we feel we need to do after we've got a real sense of what the underlying principles are for how to draft a standard and what the overall principles will be in our principles of disclosure project. So this work is being informed by and is informing our principles of disclosure project, and to some extent is even though work's being done at the moment, the results of it are going to be on hold for a little bit of a while. But we do expect to develop a drafting guide for new standards eventually, and also provide us a basis for amending new standards in the future. If I move to slide 14, I just want to mention that we're not doing all of this alone. We are involving others in the work that we're doing. So the German Standard Setter has kindly made a staff member available to work with us on this. The UK FRC has been undertaking work on cash flow reporting for us, and the Italian Standard Setter, the OIC, has been undertaking some work about the disclosures that are needed when you change an accounting policy or estimate. And as Alan mentioned, the New Zealand's External Reporting Board has been doing a review of a couple of standards, in particular IS 16 on property, plant, equipment, and IFRS 3 on business combinations, to see how they would write those disclosure requirements if they had a clean sheet. And I think the results of that research will be included in our Principles of Disclosure project. And that, again, will inform us how would we write disclosure requirements if we sort of had our time again, and what would we need to think about. So it'll be good to get feedback on the results that we get from that work. So if I move to slide 15, which gives you a sense of the timeline we're looking forward to. So we would expect to have an exposure draft of the materiality practice statement in the first half of this year, and I think that's followed later in the year by a discussion paper on our principles of disclosure. And at the end of the year, we would expect to finalise the amendments to IS7, which is currently in exposure draft at the moment. And then looking forward, we really got a couple of more years, I think, before we finish all our work here on the disclosure initiative. As this slide again suggests, is we expect that it's not just us who will be moving and doing things. We hope that the momentum and change that we've seen in people's behaviour will continue as we continue on our journey through the disclosure initiative. So if we move to the next slide, which I think, Alan, you're going to talk about, which is just to give an update on the work we're doing in digital reporting.
Yeah, thanks, Christy. Two things I want to focus on. One is, we know that when financial reports are produced, that different jurisdictions require different filing requirements. In the US, they take them and they basically use XBRL to slice them up and present very detailed, very structured data that mimics the US GAAP physical filing. In other countries, they've got XBRL operating the same sorts of ways, PDFs in different cases and so on. We're trying to facilitate it so that when people do want to actually follow the route that the US and several other countries have followed, and across Europe, it's going to be from 2020, there will be some filing requirements in terms of capturing their financial statements. It's important that there's a global standard, and so our involvement is mainly with the taxonomy. And one thing that we've done particular here is we've internally reorganized so that all of our taxonomy and electronic reporting staff work with the disclosure team, so it's an integrated team. And anybody who's been following the exposure draft for our amendments to IS7, the cash flow statement, in relation to financing costs, we'll see that it includes, and it's one of the appendices, an explanation or an exposure of the update that we would make to our taxonomy to capture the new disclosure requirement proposed. And it's written from an accounting perspective, so we're aiming and hoping to get accountants to actually reply to us and make sure that we've captured this in the right way. So that's a bit of a change. You'll start to see that more and more, assuming that it proves to be an effective way of getting information back. Now, moving on to the next slide, is the other thing that we're doing is, it's all very well once people have prepared financial statements following IFRS, what happens to them? And, I sort of say loosely, are they put into a drawer somewhere? Do you physically send them to some central location or register? Or do you file them electronically, in what form? And that accessing information is just as critical to well-functioning markets. It's not just preparing the information, it's making it accessible. So because we haven't got a good understanding of how that happens globally, we have a project we're running out of our ACO and Oceania office where they're looking at developing profiles so we can document how filing requirements what the filing requirements are, frequency of filing, frequency of reporting, and so on, so we can understand the financial reporting space better. And those profiles, we expect to launch the first batch in June of this year, and I think it'll be very interesting. Because part of that, we're also asking whether or not there are any projects that securities regulators and others are undertaking to improve the electronic access. And if they are using structured data like XBRL, we think it's important that we offer them a standard that they can use to capture the information. Right. Now, what I'm going to do is just wrap up and reflect on the 10-point plan that was in 2013 that Hans Hugerbors talked about in one of his speeches. And essentially, the 10-point plan came out of our disclosure forum, a public forum, where we identified a series of steps that we thought we needed to take relatively quickly in some longer term. You'll see on slide 20 that we've achieved quite a bit. The first 5 points that we identified were all completed in December last year when we finalised some amendments to IS1 to try and break some of the shackles, I think, that some of the peers told us were getting in the way of good reporting. The sixth one is the net debt reconciliation, which is our proposed amendment to IS7 on cash flows. So we're well over halfway through getting there. The others, point seven on materiality, eights on disclosure objectives and new standards and so on, all of those are longer term things, but as we've mentioned in here, we're close to getting a materiality exposure draft together on practice statement, and once that's finalised, that and any changes we make to the definition will complete that step. We already internally have started working with the teams and the leases team in particular about disclosure objectives and new standards, so that's developing internally. The principles disclosure discussion paper will be out later this year, and we have begun the review of disclosure requirements and existing standards. Christy said property, plant, equipment and business combinations are our two that we'll start with, and you will see the results of that work, in other words, how you might restate the disclosure requirements or represent them in those two standards we expect to include in our principles disclosure discussion paper. So you can see that when we've got the tools together, we'll be ready to go and review the rest of the standards. So we think we've made some very good progress. And Chris, we've still got a long way to go. We're seeing behavioural changes, so things are, I think, it's working quite well. And
thanks, Alan. I'm sure this was helpful in understanding the Disclosure Initiative project and the progress we are making. Now I would ask the participants to submit their questions. In the meanwhile, we already have a couple of questions, so maybe we can start with that. Maybe the first question I'll request Alan to take it, that is the interaction between cash flow statement and performance reporting. So there is a question asking whether cash flow statements is moving to performance reporting. So,
yeah, the question is it moving from primary to performance reporting? I'm not absolutely sure of the question, but there are two things in here, for example. There is a, if I focus on the word primary, there is a debate that our board has been having about what would constitute primary financial statements. And I think it's quite clear that financial position, financial performance are primary statements. But there are mixed views about whether a cash flow statement should always be primary. So that's one issue. The second thing, I think, is where in the project plan is this undertaking. We initially had cash flow statements in terms of essentially pulling all of IS1, IS8, and IS7 together into one standard. But as we've done the work, and this is the good thing about doing research work, it actually helps inform you and think about better ways to do things. As we've done this, of course, if you pulled IS7 into the project here and concluded what you think the structure ought to be, that imposes a requirement almost by default on what the structure of the income statement ought to be. And we think we should look at those two things hand in hand. So it is likely that, and our board's still to discuss this, so this is early days, but it's likely that we will move a lot of the discussions on cash flow statement structure in particular out of the disclosure initiative thread and move it over into performance reporting. Now that's going to be our recommendation to our board, and we'll discuss that, I think, in public over the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. But some of the discussion will be in the discussion paper anyway. We'll have some elements of it, possibly.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. That helps. The other question is related to sensitive information. Maybe I'll request Christy to take mm-hmm. this. How realistic? The question is an interesting one. How realistic it is to apply the disclosure initiative to sensitive information? So,
well, I think there's two points here. Ultimately, what you disclose in a set of financial statements requires judgment. So even if there is a requirement in IFRS that says that you must disclose something, there's always a matter of judgment about whether you need to disclose it, so whether it's material, and then how you disclose it and what level of detail. I think IFRS is not prescriptive to much more than setting that requirement. So even so, there is a matter of judgment. I think there's also, and this is a good point that the question raises, is that there are some overriding principles about the disclosure of sensitive information or where the cost to disclose something outweighed the benefit. And that's very much, I think, sitting in, clearly in the conceptual framework, and whether we need to think about whether we need to make that more specific in an overall standard. It will again go to that judgment in making the disclosure, but maybe we need to think about bringing some of those principles that already exist from a conceptual basis and making them clear in a disclosure standard.
Yeah, that's a really interesting and good question too, because some of this comes up in our materiality discussion, because you'll see in some cases, and we've reviewed every case in the US in particular where there's quite a rich set, that some people will say, well, we didn't think we should disclose it because it was sensitive, and the courts might say, well, actually, the investors should have had that information. So I'm not saying that you have to disclose sensitive information, but there will be this tension between the two. We can't always, as standard setters, solve that. What we can do is to give some of the factors you might need to think about in making those decisions.
Okay, thanks, Alan. We've got another question. This is on our approach of the DEI project. So this is a long question. I'll probably split it into a couple of them. The first one is our approach on the single disclosure standard, whether we are still pursuing that or it's a closed one. So the participants wants to know what is our approach on this.
Yeah, and it depends who you talk to. So if Christy answered this, she might give you a different answer. Well, we've never really had a plan to sit down and write a single disclosure standard, but that is certainly an issue that's been debated. I think there are two parts to it, and the second part of the question, when Pralay gets here, picks up some of those themes as well. But I think people find it's a bit frustrating to go to different parts to find it. I think different parts of our books basically define the disclosure. Why don't we just sit there in one place? And so you just go to one place to see the disclosure requirements. It's not just about practicality. There's a sense that because these things are placed in different little silos, in a sense, that's part of the disclosure, because we end up with repetition or slightly inconsistent. The examples we do use are things like maturity analysis. We have different ways of different time frames for expression maturity analysis. Or something like reconciliation requirements. Why don't we have a general one? And then if we need to be specific in a standard, do that. So I don't think it's actually a simple question about just one standard. What we've got to work out, and this is the ICE one replacement, maybe there are some things that whenever you do a maturity analysis, there are some general principles that would apply in all cases that ought to be there. So I think there's kind of I'm hedging my answer, but I think there is a real role for having central things where they are common types of disclosures. My personal preference is to have the disclosures with the measurement and recognition, but I think we can use the technology, and we have it with the IFRS, that have the potential to perhaps even create an appendix or illustrative appendix to IS1 that actually just repeats and draws together all the disclosure requirements to make it easy for people.
I think it's a good point. I think there's benefits both ways.
Yeah.
So whether you have the disclosures in the individual standards or you have one big disclosure standard, as you say, I think there's benefits for both. And it would be ideal if we could actually access both those benefits and have both ways of looking at disclosures. I know that I've heard feedback from board members that it would be very useful when they set a disclosure requirement to understand more clearly what other disclosures relate to that disclosure that might be outside of that standard. So, for example, if it relates to financing, what other financing activity type disclosures are already in other standards? And to be able to see that would be useful. So whether that's in one standard or, as Alan mentioned, electronically drawn together, then I think if we could give both, it would be very good.
The other part of this question was, or the comment from the participant, is that the disclosure problem is not just because of one standard or, you know, multiple standards. It's not just because of the issue. So he says that a good method would be to look at the notes disclosures or disclosures for all the standards. So just your comment on what about this.
I think, again, there's no simple answer on this. As Christy said, there are benefits there are clear benefits of when you develop or look at a particular topic, agriculture, for example. You want to think about recognition and measurement and disclosure together as a package. But then at the same time, we ought to then look at the disclosure requirements and see how they relate to all notes or the financials as well. I actually think that's partly part of the drafting guide as well for us, to make sure that we don't create these what are seen to be burdens because we look at these things in isolation. So I think that's partly the way we draft and our processes here. And then there's the issue about whether we can present multiple ways of viewing the disclosures later on as well.
Yeah, because that's another good point. I think there's no one way that you can see the information in financial statements. So at the moment, we tend to group them on a topic-by-topic basis, and that actually might be a good way to also disclose them. And many people, I think, do disclose disclosures based on a topic-by-topic basis. But others would prefer to group and propose or put those disclosures on maybe an activities basis or a segment basis. And I don't think the work that we've been talking about grouping information in IS1 gave the sense that there is no one right way and we need to convince the board that we should enable entities to choose the best way that they see gives information. But I think whatever way is chosen by an entity or the ISB means that other views are not necessarily going to be as evident, and then you have to start thinking about linking information and making it easy to cross-reference and move from one part of the financial statements to the other.
Okay. There's another question, Ellen, on related to anti-abuse. So the preparer feels that the project will have a paradigm shift and more powers will be given to the preparers in choosing the disclosures. So he wants to know what is that ISB is doing to deter anti-abuse and, you know, avoid preparers avoiding key disclosures. So what is it that they're doing?
And I think the message from this question is that they prefer more of a compliance-based approach. And that is partly a challenge. I think the key to us is to really improve the quality of the objectives, the way we express the objectives for disclosures. Because if you're absolutely clear about what you're trying to achieve, then it's much easier, I think, to get high-quality disclosure coming out of that. So, in other words, you don't just sort of say, do this or do that. If people follow the leases one, for example. They had a suggestion that we ought to disclose a weighted average, I think it is, of the lease obligations when they're expected to mature. Now, that was expressed mainly as a requirement to disclose the weighted average. Another way to think about that would be express that as an objective, and that you want information that helps the user assess the risk they face for renewing leases. And some ways you could do that are weighted average. Some you could do a table showing, you know, a range of maturities and so on. But you can't skip out of that objective, but you can think about different ways of meeting that with different disclosures. Now, we don't have simple answers to all of these. We're going to have to, in our principles disclosure discussion paper, give some examples of the type of wording that we would be thinking about introducing, because, you know, the comment that's come through here, we've heard from some saying, well, I can't audit that, or users saying, but that means that it is too much picking and choosing. And some people prefer to have much more prescriptive requirements. Others say, that's a nonsense because it just means it's mechanical. I need the flexibility, so we've got to try and make sure we get the right wording and get a lot more feedback, because if we pulled the trigger on this and said, right, we're going to be much more principled, we could end up having a paradigm shift and ended up changing something quite dramatically with very poor consequences. So it's got to be very carefully managed.
I also think that when we say we need to be more principled, it doesn't mean that we're necessarily thinking that we would just have principles.
No.
I think what we're trying to say is that we would have clearer principles, and they may be supported by the same list that we currently have, but at least you'd be able to have something to assess whether you need to provide information against that list a bit more clearly. So, as Alan said, we've made no decisions about how we would draft, and I think our wording needs to improve to enable people to apply judgment when you do have a list of disclosure requirements. But by saying principles-based, I've never presumed that it would just be a set of overall principles.
Or tell us what's useful.
Tell us what's useful, or to help with predicting future cash flows, etc. But it would give a more granular objective on which to assess any stated requirements or lists that we would provide to sort of illustrate how that objective works.
All right. I have one question on the webcast, whether this webcast will be available later on. I would want to inform that we are going to post this webcast on our Disclosure Initiative website, the project page. So it is accessible. And on slide 2, we have also given you the link. So people who want to access later on, they can do it. I don't see any other questions. If there are any, we could answer. But I think we could end this now here. And I would thank Alan and Christy and all the participants for sparing time with the Disclosure Initiative team today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.